Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
Talking football here with Bob, Dave, and more. We do it every day with the Professor John Clayton, who joins us now. Hello, John.
Hello, guys.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Are you? How are you feeling about, before we get in the NFL, yeah, are you looking forward to the XFL season?
Yes, I'm very much so. Yeah, because again, it's football, and I'm looking to see the style of the game, you know, the fast pace, you know, look to see what prospects look good. I think it looks good from the Seahawks standpoint because it looks like they have one of the better teams. Certainly, you see the interest in town with over 20,000 season tickets. No, I'm looking forward to it.
Do you think this will be a farm system for the NFL, that we'll see many of these guys make that jump? Obviously, we've talked to Kaysen Williams, and he still has aspirations to play in the NFL, which I would assume most of these guys would. Do you think we'll see a lot of guys that use this as a springboard?
I do. I think that's the natural thing, because I mean, you go and you play till April, and then, you know, you go and you have a chance to maybe get into the NFL because you get to showcase yourself. And I think that, you know, it gets good because, again, it's a little bit of a different game, but I think that you can adjust to it. It's still football. And so, no, I think it can be. I don't see it ever being totally linked with the NFL, but I think it can help the NFL find more players. You know, and really, you know, what happens, and you see it with the quarterback position, I mean, the quarterbacks don't get much chance to play if you're with a real good quarterback. And so you have so many quarterbacks that go through 3-4 years after being drafted and then not getting on the field. And so now they're on the field and you get a chance to see it. It was almost like when you watched NFL Europe back in the, you know, the late 1990s, what ended up happening is that you send over somebody like a John Kitna. He comes back, he can be a starter. I'm not saying it's going to be to that degree, but I think it does. As long as you get some playing time and you get some film, then you get a chance to see, you know, what other things can do positively for you in a game of football.
Yeah, just the reps, man. I mean, it's huge. And, you know, that's the thing when you're working out and all that. I mean, we heard that from Robert Turbin.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I remember when he came in, he's like, yeah, you can run and all this stuff, but, you know, training for football, I mean, you actually get to play. Maura Dooley helped me find our sideline reporter for the XFL Dragons, helped me find my favorite player, John. It's Jaquan Gardner. He's a running back, 5'5", 200 pounds.
There you go.
From Humboldt State, which is my dad's alma mater. Do you know the Humboldt State mascot, John?
I do not know the Humboldt State.
They
mascot.
Are the Lumberjacks.
The Lumberjacks?
Yes.
Okay, that would be kind of fitting.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, it's going to be cool. Let me ask you this, John. The point after scoring here, it's a tiered point system. So from the 2-yard line, you get 1 point. 2 points from the 5-yard line and 3 points from the 10-yard line. What is your strategy, Professor?
I think I would probably do the I'm more into the kicking stuff, but of course that's not going to be part of this
no
game.
Kicks.
So
yep.
No kicks. So I'd probably get as close to the goal as I possibly can.
Yeah. No, John. Of course, Jim.
No.
Of course, Jim the gambler, John, is going for the 3-pointer from the 10-yard line every time,
regardless of the game situation.
Every time.
Coach
every time.
Moore is going to do that every
well,
time.
Maybe not
John.
In the fourth quarter, depending on what the score is.
Not every time. It's all or nothing.
But you know what's cool though,
does that
John?
Surprise you, John?
Yeah, not surprise me, no.
John, you can be down 18 points in the fourth quarter, and you're only 2 scores behind in the XFL.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
See how those comebacks go.
Yeah.
Now, how do you think Patrick Mahomes would do with that?
Oh, he
probably pretty well.
Yeah, I think so. Okay, we have some Rams news, John. Eric Weddle retires.
Mm-hmm.
What's his legacy?
Legacy is just a smart football player, guy that knew what he was doing, real talented, and this is a big blow, I think, to the Rams. And again, showing that things aren't going to get better for them, it could get worse, because I think that they had the expectation he would play a couple years. And you know, that's one of the problems that they got themselves into last year, is that when you start to go old, then sometimes that may not work. Now, it worked with Clay Matthews, it worked for 1 year with Eric Weddle, but now you have to kind of wonder, okay, now they have to go get a safety. You know, they got two defensive linemen whose contracts are up. I mean, this is a big blow to them because you take away a Pro Bowl talent who can do a lot of good things.
And the Rams are planning to have a discussion with Todd Gurley probably about his contract, John. It says here $7.5 million fully guaranteed due to Todd Gurley on March 20th if he's still on the roster at that point. You think they're going to try and trade him, or what's the situation there?
I think they're going to try to trade him, but I don't know what you can do because, you know, his contract is so big that I don't think anybody wants to take that on. And so they're going to have to really pay somebody to do that. You know, at $14.5 million a year, I mean, that's just brutal. So, no, I think they're going to be in tough shape on that one.
John, we were talking about something Brady wrote for ESPN.com, just talking about the idea that Blair will be a favorite to start alongside Quandre Diggs next season, which makes Bradley McDougal a potential salary cap casualty. He's $5.43 million cap hit. They would save $4.1 million against the cap if they release McDougal. A, would you think that Marquise Blair is the likely starter next year? And B, would you feel comfortable with them getting rid of McDougal?
I don't feel comfortable with that at all.
Yeah, none of us did either.
No, I think that'd be a mistake because, you know, and particularly if you go to what, you know, Russell Wilson is asking for is that, I mean, here's a guy that's got Pro Bowl talent. I mean, he was a year past since being a Pro Bowl alternate, and, you know, he works so well with Quandre Diggs. And where Blair is nice to have him as a good young player who can do some things, they need the consistency and they need the good play. So I think it'll be a major mistake to do it, and I don't think they'd do it.
Yeah, I agree. Plus, they've had some three safety defenses out there, mm-hmm. and I know they did in the end there in Green Bay, especially. Hey, you know, I'm reading an article here. It says if Tom Brady wants the 49ers, would the 49ers want them? Want him? And then you know there was some talk about you know Jimmy Garoppolo's job is safe for now, and I'm like, when did this happen? I thought they were all in on Garoppolo.
They are.
It was Mike Florio wrote a piece about Shanahan's initial interest in Kirk Cousins and why he didn't look at Patrick Mahomes because he thought he was going to get Kirk Cousins the next year. And now Kirk Cousins is coming up on his deal. So there, he was basically writing that, you know, Shanahan likes Cousins and potentially he could bring him in and they'd get rid of Garoppolo.
Yeah, there was nothing about his season that would make me even be curious about that yet. I've seen a couple of different articles and ideas and things like that. So
well, he won.
It's kind of weird.
Last I checked, didn't he win 13 games?
Yes, he did.
Yeah, and he won 2 playoff games.
Yeah.
I mean, what more? It's almost like saying because Jared Goff scored 3 points in the Super Bowl against New England, they should get rid of him. I mean, that's an overreaction.
Well, Dave agrees with that, though.
What's that?
Getting rid of Jared Goff.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm not super impressed by him. But 69% completion percentage for him. Now, he threw a good amount of interceptions. 27 touchdowns, 13 interceptions. But still, I guess maybe it's because, you know, everybody thinks that he's kind of a game manager type because he went 6-for-8 in the playoff game.
Yeah, but I mean, let's put it this way. They're paying him $27.5 million. He won 15 games for the team this year. Yeah. He's not going to go anywhere. But again, I think that it was going to be interesting to see if he has an off season that maybe that they'd consider going for Kirk Cousins. But then what's Minnesota's position? Would they let Kirk Cousins go? We don't know that.
What kind of a Super Bowl hangover do you think they're going to have?
A lot.
Do you think they're going to be good next year?
I think they're going to be good, but I don't see them going back to the Super Bowl because I think it's so tough. I mean, you saw what happened to the Rams. I think what you look at is that if Seattle does a good job this offseason, and if they can get the pass rush going, add a few more things, then I think they can take back the division and then see where they are as far as bye weeks and everything else, where I think San Francisco is a wild card team. I know then you start to look at some of the plus-minus stuff and all that as far over-under, and they're saying that it's going to be possibly a 11.5 win season. I think there's going to be a bigger drop off. I think they drop off to maybe 10.
Hey, and speaking of the safeties here with the Seahawks, and we talked about Lano Hill and Tedrick being disappointments. Are they on this team next year?
I think probably not. I mean, one will probably stay, but like in the case, I think the one that's going to be in jeopardy is going to be Tedrick Thompson because, because of his playing time, he's now got the escalator in his contract. And so his base salary of $735,000 goes up to $2,411, at least based on the current cap numbers. And so that, I think, puts him in a position to maybe be a casualty. Now, again, he can maybe negotiate down and get back to $735,000, but I think one of the two will be gone.
You mean it goes $2.4 million?
$2.4 million. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
$2,411,000. Yeah.
Who do you think is going to be the Eagles' offensive coordinator? That was the one coaching. There's still no offensive coordinator in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be Doug Peterson. I mean, Doug's going to be calling the plays, and whatever you have as a title does it really mean anything? So, I think at this stage, I mean, he's going to you know, he's going to do the play calling, and you know, they'll have quarterback coach, and they'll have a, you know, passing game coordinator and all that stuff. But it's Doug Peterson's show, and he's going to control it.
Well, do you think we're going to see more and more of that, John? Because the 49ers are doing the same thing. The Eagles with a passing game coordinator, running game coordinator. Are more teams going
to
do that?
Yeah, we've been seeing it. It's up to, I think, 14 head coaches right now that are calling their own plays. And it's really been, it's been growing. It's actually been in at that level for the last 3 or 4 years. Now, you know, they'll hire some and they'll get fired. But, you know, in the end, I think that it's one where you can still see it's a, you know, that what everybody wants is that head coach who can call plays. It was a kind of unusual that Bruce Arians, who's a very good play caller, abdicated his play calling responsibilities and gave it to Byron Leftwich. But you just don't see much of that anymore.
Hey, I'm reading that Antonio Brown did an interview on 93.7 The Fan out there in Pittsburgh, and he apologized to the organization. He says, I apologize to those guys for the distractions, the unwanted attention that I probably caused those guys. He says, to the organization, you want to clear out any baggage or any disrespect or unintended attention that was brought on to the organization. They gave me an opportunity when I was 21. I'm forever grateful, blah, blah, blah. He's kind of doing the apology tour. We saw him apologize to the... So do you think somebody's gotten to him? Is there somebody that he actually trusts that is steering him in the right direction? Is he trying to find his way back into the league? What do you make of his apology to him?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's a start. I think that's encouraging that he's trying to do something like that. But is it going to change anything? You know, these are words, and he said these words at different times before. I mean, I think he's now trying to, but you have to think that somebody's kind of coordinating a lot of this stuff for him to do radio stations and all that. I mean, I know that he was on that station on a regular show, and he would maybe show up half the time. So, you know, kind of interesting to see, you know, what the reaction is going to be. But no, I think that somebody must be getting to him, which is good, but I don't know if it's necessarily going to help until he fully gets evaluated and find out what is really wrong.
Hey, John, you and I had a discussion this morning about Clowney, and you said that you thought about half of the teams were 3-4, 4-3. You were exactly right. 16 out of 32 were 3-4. Yeah, but, you know, I'm just – I think it's still – I just kind of went through and took out the 3-4 teams and then looked at some of, you know, some of the 4-3 teams and, you know, does he want to go to Cleveland?
No.
Does he want to go to Cincinnati?
No.
Kansas City doesn't need anybody, really. I don't think he wants to go to Jacksonville. San Francisco doesn't need him. Maybe Buffalo, they're a playoff team, right? But it just doesn't seem like that. But anyway, just you can kind of wear it down to like maybe 3 or 4 teams. I don't know how big of a deal it is that he, you know, would want to play in a 4-3, but just
let's put it this way. It's still money. And he wants money.
Yeah.
And of course, if you're going to be a linebacker, I mean, you're going to be, you know, 16 to 17 million, kind of like Za'Darius Smith. But if you're a defensive end, I mean, the worst you're going to get is 18 million, and we'll see how close you can get to 2021.
All right.
I had not even thought about that, John. That is a great point. Yeah, because, you know, you're a defensive end, a pass rusher is just a premium player. So, yeah, but yeah, that pretty much eliminates the 3-4.
Yeah, so that's what I'm looking at. Because
what about New Orleans?
Well, they've already paid Cameron Jordan.
Yeah.
And Alex Okafor. Well, actually, they lost Alex Okafor, but they also have a first-round pick that, you know, has done pretty well before he got injured. So I can't see them being involved. And again, you know, like, for example, Atlanta would be a classic type of team, but they're so tight against the cap, I can't see them being able to do anything.
Yeah. So once you look at cap numbers, you look at 4-3 teams, because you're right, he wants the money. And then, you know, he wants to be on a winning team. I'm looking at Philadelphia, Dallas. How are those guys salary cap-wise?
Well, remember, they pay big money to Brandon Graham. So they already paid one defensive end, and they have – well, Derek Barnett really hasn't worked out. You know, they could be involved, but they've got a lot of business to do, and I think that it might – because, again, what happens is if you bring in somebody for the – because Brandon Graham kind of did a team-friendly deal, but if you bring in and pay 20 to $21 million to Clowney, you know, that's going to really probably upset Brandon Graham, and you cause problems in the locker room, and you don't want to really do that.
Yeah. Oh, also in Philly – we were talking about this earlier. He's a criminal in Philadelphia, apparently.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, they don't like him there.
Yeah, you think if they invested big money and signed him that they would forgive him out there, that fan base?
No, not the fans. Hey, fans will be very upset with him.
Professor, you know I just throw crazy things at you from time to time? I'm going to do it again, and you can tell me how crazy it is. There's a scale of crazy, 1 to 10 here. I was looking at the running backs that are available in free agency, and I was thinking with Chris Carson, he should be back and good to go off of that hip injury since it's not requiring surgery. You're not so sure about Rashad Penny, though. That seems problematic. And so I was looking at these three names, John. What do you think? I was getting excited thinking about Kenyon Drake in the Seahawks backfield, and I was also thinking about maybe Melvin Gordon and Carlos Hyde.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think, John?
Well, I mean, I think age might work against Carlos Hyde, but I think you can get him for maybe $3-4 million. Certainly, it's going to be too expensive on Drake. I think that's going to be $6-7 million, and you don't want to do that. So that one, and Jordan could be an interesting one because I don't know how much he's going to command because, I mean, he went to the Pro Bowl in Chicago and they let him go. I think you can probably get him to $3-4 million. So I'd say the two options would be Howard and maybe Hyde. But again, Hyde's a little bit older, and I don't think you really want to get older at running back.
What's going to happen with Derrick Henry? Do you think the Titans are going to cough up the money he's going to want, or do you think the devaluation of the running back will continue and they'll let him go?
I think they'll franchise him. I think that's probably the smartest.
What's that number?
That's let me see here. It's hold on. It's the running back number, from what I gather right now, is going to be 10.372, roughly.
Okay.
So $10 million.
Wait, has it gone down? Because wasn't it 14 and a half or Le'Veon
Bell? He got 13.125. But remember, it's not the average, it's the cap number. And so the cap number, you know, it went up maybe a little bit as it's going to go every year. But yeah, 10.3 is what that would be. And so I think that even though he won't like it, I think that's probably the smart thing to do.
All right, John, I know we're jumping the gun here. Class of 2021, Hall of Fame, the first year eligible guys.
Yep.
Peyton Manning.
In.
Definitely, right? How about
Definitely.
Charles Woodson?
In.
Okay. The other ones are, these are, how about
Calvin Johnson?
Megatron?
Shaky. You know, because as great as he was, and the visual eye says he should, but then, you know, he got out of it, at the age of 30? And so his numbers are closer to Michael Irvin, which, of course, is great when you're playing in the 80s, but it doesn't compare to the guys playing now. So I think, you know, he may have to wait a little bit. I mean, he doesn't have the 12, 13,000 yards that other receivers have. And, you know, we've got a little bit of a backlog at running back, because now I'll throw this back to all three of you guys. Would you go Calvin Johnson? Would you go with Torrey Holt? Or would you go Reggie Wayne?
I'd go Megatron, John.
Megatron was pretty impressive.
Yeah, he was. I agree.
I don't know how they're, off the top of my head, how all their numbers compare.
I mean, Bob likes Torrey Holt. I'll just go ahead and say that.
He's part of one of my favorite all-time offenses, the greatest show on turf, and I don't know how their numbers compare to each other.
He likes Sam Bradford, too, unnecessarily.
Not anymore.
One time chased me into the bathroom, John,
to say it wasn't his fault.
How great Sam Bradford is.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How'd that go?
It was good.
Well, Bob had lots of very compelling. I was like, can I have my business here for a minute, though?
Can you let me zip up, Bob, please?
Yeah. Jared Allen. What about Jared Allen?
I think he has a decent chance because he's got the sacks. Yeah. So, I mean, it might take a year extra because, you know, you go back, and that's what was so beautiful about this class. Again, it wasn't the sexiest class. It wasn't the big name class. Didn't have a quarterback, had one running back. But we were able to get four in after several. We had, back-to-back years with three, a two first ballots, a three. So really, there's only been, four, seven, nine openings that weren't first ballot in the last 4 years. So that cleaned up some things, and now it's a matter, you figure that, it'll be, obviously Woodson should make it as a first ballot, Peyton will make it, and just because of the way the votes will go against each other, one of the other guys, whether it's Allen or that, will make it. So there'll be three first ballots, and then hopefully Alan Faneca or Tony Baselli will make it, and then one of the wide receivers.
What about, Dave just popped up, Steven Jackson, who was a workhorse.
Mm-hmm. 11,000 yards.
Yep.
Is that the number, John, 10, you said?
No, it's usually about 11 and a half to 12.
To 12,000 gets you in.
So you think he's in?
Not first ballot, no. I think it would say, because again, it's like we're not going to have a year where there's going to be five first ballots. That's just not going to happen, particularly when you have a backlog of guys that you still want to get in. But again, it's like, hey, the Jackets, they're still made fresh. It's not like they get stale after a couple years. And once you're in, and you're in for life.
I'd like to see him make it, John, just because he's from Oregon State.
A Beaver.
Yeah,
he'll make it at some point. I mean, he has the yards, he has the credentials, he's had the success, all that. It's just a matter of, it's like, you know, when can you make it? And this is going to be a very difficult time right now because, you know, you've got so many, you know, real good players are going to be first ballot. And that's, you kind of knew that the year that Peyton retired and you see, you know, Woodson and all that. It's like, you know, you only have five spots. You have to say no to 10.
Well, and Deion, according to Deion Sanders, they're just letting anybody in.
Oh, yeah, right.
Maybe Tom, Dick, and Harry.
Yeah, good move by him. Bad move by him.
John, we know the 49ers were 4-12 last year and then came back and went all the way to the Super Bowl. Adam Rank from NFL.com projected three teams that might do the same thing next year, go from having a bad team to the Super Bowl perhaps. He lists Denver, Pittsburgh, and the New York Giants. What do you think of those picks?
I don't buy the Giants because I think they have too many holes. And so I don't buy that. I do buy Pittsburgh, and to a slight degree I buy Denver. But again, can they do that with Drew Lock at quarterback? That's where I kind of question it. I mean, I think that they can be better, but I think of the three teams, I'd go with Pittsburgh. Because again, what do they get back?
That's just because you're a fan.
No, because they get Ben Roethlisberger back. I mean, when you get a Hall of Fame quarterback, I mean, last I checked, that does help.
Yeah, but you're a fan too.
Well, who's your sleeper team, John?
Haven't determined any yet. I mean, I think that you can certainly, you know, Pittsburgh, I think, will bounce back. I mean, you can make an argument that maybe Cleveland will be a little bit of a sleeper team.
I'm with you on the Steelers, man. They got some personnel on defense.
Oh, I mean, that's the big thing about them. And, you know, you talk to your buddy Keith Butler. How much better are they on defense?
Oh, my gosh. And they led the league in sacks. Mm-hmm. T.J. Watt, as a rookie, was an all-pro.
Right. They got Minkah Fitzpatrick.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're loaded.
John, good stuff. We'll do it again tomorrow.
Okay, sounds good.
There you go. The Professor John Clayton with us every day here with Bob, Dave, and more. Coming up next, it's the moment that Jim's been waiting
John
for.
John was really good, but this next segment is going to be the best one of the show.
Is it?
Yep.
All right. Jim's been waiting anxiously to speak with C.J. Ellaby. He's going to join us next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
It is Bob, Dave, and Moore here on 710 ESPN Seattle. A big day for Jim Moore, our super coug here.
I'm fired up.
Yes, we know, Jim. You've made it very clear over the past couple days. He couldn't be more excited to speak to this man who's with us on the Zeke's Pizza Hotline. He is having a big season for the Washington State Cougars on that basketball floor. We're talking about C.J. Ellaby. C.J., how are you, man?
I'm doing good. You know, just out in Pullman getting ready for Washington coming down on Sunday.
Well, before we get into the Huskies and that matchup, just give me a thought on your season. I mean, you're having individually a terrific season, averaging over 18 points and 7 boards. Are you a guy that sets goals for yourself before the season, saying, man, I want to average at least this many points, or I want to average this many rebounds? Do you set number markers for yourself?
I set goals for myself, but I wouldn't say specific numbers. I'm more of a feel guy, a rhythm player, and I just know what I'm capable of, and, you know, sometimes I have really good games. Sometimes I play all right, but at the end of the day, I just want to get a win with my team, and I think that's the biggest thing for me this year is just wanting to put a win on that record.
Hey, CJ, did you know this is the highlight of my day talking to you?
I appreciate that. This is a great time. You know, I enjoy talking to you guys right now.
Yeah, well, I'm really excited because my kids and I, we watch every game, and so we were watching last Thursday, Arizona State. You get the ball, you take the step back three, and you make it and end up beating the Sun Devils. What was that like that night, hitting that game winner?
Oh, man, that was a super crazy shot just because, you know, we were up 15 through the second half, you know. We kind of let them come back, but I feel like we had control of the game for most of the game. And just, you know, for it to have to come down to that last possession, I knew that if the ball came in my hands, I could make a play, and I just did.
What's it been like playing for your new coach? It's sure been a lot more fun to watch you guys. You're more competitive this year.
Really, it's just a breath of fresh air, you know. Coach Smith came in last spring, and he really came in with just a new mindset, you know, only looking forward. And it was just easy to jump on track with him. He spoke, you know, very clearly. He told us what he wanted from us, and he was very clear with his expectations. And so it was just he's easy to follow. He's a great mentor, a great leader for our team.
How much different is
for our program?
How much different is what he's asking you to do from what you were being asked with the previous coach? Are you playing? Is your approach completely different? Is the scheme dramatically different? For those that haven't watched a ton of Cougar basketball out there, give us a sense of the difference.
You know, that's one question I get a lot, and I say that one of the main things that Coach Smith brings is just consistency every day. That's what they preach to us too, is, you know, bringing that same energy. And that's one of the things we control. You know, you can't go out every night and expect to be more talented than the team, or, you know, have better players on the floor, because we know we're not going to bring that every night. But we know that we can be the better team that night. We know we can outwork them. You know, we know we can have an attitude that we bring every night, and it could propel us to get a win.
CJ, 2 weeks ago, Klay Thompson was in town. They retired the number there at Washington State. How much fun was that for you?
Oh my gosh, that was just a crazy weekend. It was like a dream the whole week. It was magical for Pullman.
Yeah, I'll bet it was. Boy, it was sure fun, and he sure feels strongly about Pullman, and I imagine you do too. Was it a tough decision when you came out of Cleveland High School trying to figure out where to go?
To be honest, you know, it really wasn't too hard of a decision. I had about 7 offers coming out of high school, and I'd probably say I was considering 2 schools the most, and that was Seattle U and that was Washington State. And once I came here, you know, I think it was really the place that caught my eye. It was like kind of exactly where I wanted to be, where I could focus on school and academics and stuff and social life, and then basketball just be right there at my fingertips. And so just getting away, you know, I'm not too far from home, but I'm far enough away where I can really just focus on what I got to do.
You've got the Huskies at 3:00 on Sunday. Do you get fired up a little more for that game coming from your hometown playing against those guys?
Oh yeah, it's definitely going to be I got some fire going into that game, and it's just a rivalry for Pullman. You know, the Apple Cup is always a game that's waited on and counted on, and I think that everybody's really excited to get the game on underway.
What kind of a turnout do you expect? You know, with the games I've watched this year, I got to be honest, you guys have been playing great basketball, and I'm wondering when the Cougar fan base is going to realize that.
I hope that we can feel the stands. You know, once again, I don't know if we can have it like Clay Night, because obviously, you know, that's just a special occasion. You know, that would be a perfect if we could, but I hope just that, you know, whoever comes cheers real loud and we can get a great environment. Because I know that that's what it's capable of. Beasley can be a real energetic place when the fans come through.
CJ, you guys have been really good at home, though. You have a good record there, especially in conference. But what about on the road? What do you need to do to get that winning going on the road?
Yeah, that's been a struggle for us. And I'd say the road, we just got to play a little more fire. I think we come out and we sometimes start really good. You know, we come out, we're up on a team 7 or 8. And then another team makes a run, and the crowd starts getting into it, and it's kind of one thing happens, and we kind of, you know, we all play like we start playing on our own. We don't play as good together. We kind of break down when one thing doesn't go our way. I think we just got to be a little more tougher on the road, and kind of expect that to happen, and just respond a little bit better.
CJ Ellaby is our guest here with Bob, Dave, and Moore for a few more moments on 710 ESPN Seattle. They get set to take on the Huskies this Sunday in the Apple Cup. Hey, CJ, who do you model your game after? Who are some of the players in the NBA that you look up to or idolize on some level?
That was a tough question thinking about, because I got asked some of that by NBA teams when I was going on my workouts and stuff. And it's hard to really say who I model my game after. I like to think that I took the mindset of Kobe Bryant, just the way he approaches the game and his work ethic. I've never been the fastest guy. I've never jumped the highest. I was barely recruited out of high school, you know, compared to some of the guys, my closest friends. And it never really determined, you know, I've always felt that I was prepared and ready to play on the highest levels of basketball. And it's just something that I do every day. I work on my game every day. And I think that's just the difference. But, you know, just thinking about that, like I said, I like to think my mindset is like Kobe. But it's really hard. Do you guys have somebody you think?
I mean, Jim would be a better gauge of that, but I'm just curious who you watch, like who are the players you look at, you watch, and to say, man, I love, like, whether it's Giannis, whether it's LeBron, whether, I mean, there's so many stars at the NBA level. I'm just wondering who you really look at and say, man, that guy is fun to watch. He is must-watch television.
This year, what's really caught my eye is how LeBron is just leading the NBA in assists, you know, just in his 17th year, I believe it is. The way he can pass the ball and the level he's passing it at, I mean, he really can be any position he wants to be on the court, you know? And so it just amazes me how he can do that and just his vision on the court.
By the way, that's the only category that you don't lead the team in. You lead the team in points, rebounds, steals, blocks. I guess you got to get the assist numbers up, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I think Isaac does it. He probably leads the way in that. He really controls that ball.
Hey, CJ, what's your most gratifying play, whether it's swatting somebody's shot, three-point shot, dunk? What would you take? What's your favorite?
Blocks would definitely have to be up there. I don't think I've got a really like a fast break pin down this year yet, but last year I know I had a few of them. Block is one of them, and blocks and steals, those kind of get my teammates going. Yeah. So I'd say those are probably the most like energy givers. And I like getting those a lot.
Hey, CJ, I just want to end it by saying thank you. Thank you for making Cougar basketball fun again. And I know I'm supposed to be a sports talk show host and ask questions and be more professional, but I don't care. I'm a fan of the team. And it's just been a heck of a lot more fun watching the team this year. And you guys might even play in a postseason tournament. So it's fun to see Cougar basketball back on the map again.
You know, I appreciate you saying that to me, and I just have to say it's such a team effort. You know, Coach Smith, I mean, he is an amazing coach, and the way he's just running the program and bringing everybody together, I just say props to him, you know, because it really feels like a family here, and I love it. I love being here every day.
Okay, go beat the dogs now, would you?
Yes, sir. Got you, man. It's going to be a fun one.
All right, go Cougs.
Go Cougs.
All right, there you go. There is C.J. Ellaby. Good to catch up with him. See how things go against the Huskies this weekend. I would imagine they'd go pretty well. I've lost faith in the Husky team. I think they're just too young, too many young mistakes, and it snowballs really quickly, as we've seen game after game. Yeah, the last one, A, because I really settled in to watch it, and then B, I missed the NFL thing that was going on that you were texting about while the game was going on. I'm like, I don't know what Dave's talking about here. I'm watching the Huskies lose another game. It's really disturbing. But our thanks to C.J. Ellaby. Coming up, Damian Williams gave his Super Bowl jersey to Raheem Mostert, but now perhaps he wants it back? I'll let you hear what he had to say about that when we sweep the dial next with Bob Dave and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob Dave and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Sweeping the dial. Streaming everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now, there you are after the game. Who are you talking to there?
Raheem, man. That's my dude right there.
You're talking to Raheem from the Niners, and you guys exchange jerseys. That's a tradition?
You know, when they started doing this, you know, a couple years ago, I really wasn't a fan, or I really didn't do that much because, you know, I didn't want to, if I have to win or a loss, go up to somebody like, hey, look at your jersey.
Uh-huh.
Right. But nah, you know, we built the friendship, you know, when he came to Miami with us, you know, he was only there for, you know, a short time. And I talked to him before the game, like, you know, I don't care what happens. I want to see you after the game.
That's nice. That's really now, I will tell you, though, that you realize because you guys won and they didn't, the jersey you gave him is worth a lot more than the jersey he gave you.
And that's funny you say that because my mom was like, where's your jersey?
Oh, no. Oh,
man. I gave it away.
I'll call.
That's Damian Williams on the Jimmy Kimmel Show. Damian Williams, who probably should have been the MVP of the Super Bowl, running back for the Kansas City Chiefs. Who
most definitely should have been.
And I watched that. There was a video of those two in the tunnel exchanging jerseys. It was interesting because they kind of went off to the side, and you've got all of the 49ers walking past them. You know, these two are talking to each other, and I think 49ers players kept looking back almost like, is there something going on? Like, Is there, you know, friction or what was going on? They just kind of stared at him as they were walking through, disappointed losing the Super Bowl. But, yeah, so they had the jersey swap, and then apparently it settled in with Damian's mom and him that, yeah, that there might be some value to that winning jersey. I gave him much more than the Mostert jersey I now currently possess.
Well, probably like most moms, she just wanted her son's jersey from the biggest game that he's ever played in.
Yeah. So did they arrange how they're going to get it back, or is he going to – Mostert going to give it back to him? Or
Mostert's planning on giving it back.
Raheem Mostert tweeted out, contemplated putting this on eBay, but this belongs to you and yours. You did your thing. Hands this down to generations. Proud of you, bro. Much love.
Yeah, he's being very cool about it.
What a good
it.
Friend.
Yeah.
Well, they're great friends, so obviously you don't screw over your friends, but that's pretty cool.
He put the laughing, crying emoji to signify joking, Dave. Contemplated putting this on eBay.
I don't speak emoji.
Yeah, you gotta have those so people know tone.
I'm trying to picture Dave Wyman back in the day if the Seahawks had played in the Super Bowl and didn't win the Super Bowl, exchanging jerseys with someone from the winning team.
He would have attacked that person.
What if it was Jack Lambert? I might make an exception.
Who was a player you just really disliked? I'm trying to think of who you
disliked.
Brought yeah, playing it just opposing player that you just like. That guy was it.
Steve Wisniewski.
Yeah. So if Wisniewski came up to you and said, "Great game, man. Much respect. Let's exchange jerseys."
Punch him in the jaw.
You'd have looked like that picture you showed me of the GM getting punched in the face.
Yeah, that's right.
Altogether, 10 student athletes were suspended, including two managers, five of them right here at TSU. All of this happening after the game against Alabama State in Birmingham earlier this week. It was all caught on cell phone video. Take a look. You can see those students fighting there. We're not sure exactly what sparked the fight. We have reached out, though, to TSU this afternoon with several high-ranking staff telling us they are disappointed with what happened after Monday night's game.
We were just watching the video of that in the break. Jim was showing it to me, and it was a
Donnybrook.
It was a real deal. It was. There were a lot of shoving, a lot of arms flailing, and tables being pushed over. There were more people on the court than were in the stands by far. There was nobody in that building.
Yeah, I'd like to know what caused it, because it wasn't a close game. Texas Southern beating Alabama State 81-54, but boy, they were throwing haymakers in the Donnybrook there, Dave.
I see. Whoa, breaking out some old boxing terms there.
There was a lot of wild swinging and shoving, and it looked like the whole scorer's table got pushed over. And
10 players are going to be suspended.
Well, and it seemed like it was like it picked up speed, then it calmed down, then it got worse, and then it calmed down, and then it moved from like half court all the way over to, like you said, the scoring table over there. Jeez. I wonder if there's any injuries or anything that came out of this.
Yeah, I don't know. They went for it, though. There was anger.
Were you surprised?
I was surprised.
They didn't steal signs back in your day?
They did. They didn't steal them that way.
Do you think the punishment fit the crime?
No, I don't. I think whoever did that should be out of baseball the rest of their life.
That's the voice of one of the greatest ever, Hammerin' Hank Aaron, talking about the Astros scandal. Asked if the punishment fit the crime. Well, there was no punishment for the players.
And how old is Hank Aaron now?
He's 86. I just checked that out. He just had a birthday yesterday.
Yeah. Wow.
And he said, in case people couldn't hear him, he thinks any player involved should be banned for life.
I wonder if people have like really thought about this and really have, you know, just your average fan, or, you know, maybe if you're not a baseball fan, realize the severity of that. It's really been brought home by things like that, what Hank Aaron said, but then also talking to Marco. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's like, it's everything to me. That's and to me, I can't think of anything that was more, I guess, gives you a better advantage than that in a cheating way. Mm-hmm. You know, like if you knew the play that a football team was going to run. Even you still got to stop it. There's still lots of block. But knowing that, and just the more you think about it, you know what not to swing at. And again, you know, you see big league hitters that are good hitters get fooled all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, swinging on something they think is going to be a fastball, and it's a changeup, and it comes, you know, they get fooled by that. To me, I'm starting to lean more towards Hank Aaron.
I keep hearing about the players getting immunity for testifying that it
their
actually
cooperation
happened.
With
cooperating,
the,
but Did they really need the players to cooperate? They had the goods on them anyway. I just feel like the players should have gotten suspended. Something should have happened.
There should have been something.
Altuve, as much as we like him, if he's benefiting from that, he should have been suspended for the season.
Every player on that team's complicit. I keep going back. I know Altuve and Bregman have become the face of this, but they weren't working alone. Everybody benefited, including the pitchers that were getting their offense to score runs for them. So everybody's complicit. I don't blame Altuve more than I blame Springer, more than I blame Bregman. They're all equal. And I agree. There should have been something. Now, maybe they did work out a deal and we've got immunity or whatever, but the deal should have included, listen, all right, we're not going to suspend you for the whole season. You work with us, we'll suspend you 10 games. We're going to fine you X amount of dough. Something. For them just to walk away scot-free. And you're talking about putting the integrity of the game in question and the results of a World Series in question. For them just to walk away like, we're good. We're going to win next year. Now we've got a chip. Everybody doubts us now. We'll show you.
I believe that they had buzzers too, don't you?
I don't doubt Altuve
duck into the dugout there the way he did.
It's hard to argue against it.
Once you open up, you don't put anything past them,
right?
Yeah. Right.
The slack is gone. The reasonable doubt is gone. They've lost that. So I disagree with Hank. I wouldn't have banned him for life.
Yeah, that's a little
extreme. And I love Hank Aaron. I disagree with him, but they should have been punished. I agree that the punishment did not fit the crime because there was no punishment for them anyway. All right, coming up, we may have found an analytics person that doesn't think that Brian Schottenheimer is wasting Russell Wilson's career. We'll hear what he had to say next with Bob David Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.